It is Thursday, July 27th. You're listening to The Christian Commute. You're riding with your host, Seth Dunn. I am already on the freeway. You joined me mid-show because I botched the opening so bad. I don't know if I've ever restarted the show by the time I've gotten to the Bible chapter review before, but that's what I did. I messed up the Bible chapter review so bad I had to start over. So here I am. And I was already going to be pressed for time on the show because it's a full show. It's a full show. I have a question in the inbox. And the show topic is called Where the Streets Have No Name, because I couldn't think up of a better title for it. And yes, that is a U2 song. It's a good song, and I'll do my best not to sing it for you and torture your ears with my own rendition of a U2 classic. But I'm on the way to watch my kids do gymnastics, like toddler gymnastics, which on the one hand, I really don't care to watch gymnastics, but on the other hand, I'm glad they're doing something in the evening that I can watch them do. But because the place is closer to the freeway than my house, the show might be a little short, and I lost 2 or 3 minutes when I botched the opening. So let me get right back into it, starting at the Bible chapter review. 2 Corinthians 13, verses 3 through 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 3 and 4. You will recall that yesterday we reviewed Paul's plans to get there and spare no one. He is going to come, and if anyone is still in sin, who was in sin last time, he's not going to spare them. We talked a little bit about church discipline, but we're going... Following Paul's thought, we catch him mid-sentence, and it's so easy to catch Paul mid-sentence because he writes giant run-on sentences. And we catch him mid-sentence in verse 3. It says, I'm going to spare no one when I come if they're still in sin, since you are seeking proof of the Christ who speaks in me. So Paul is saying, you're seeking proof of the Christ who speaks in me. You're going to get it, and I'm not going to spare anyone. He's going to be strong here in his discipline. And Paul says, Christ is not weak, but we are mighty in him. So Paul's saying, Christ is not weak towards the church of Corinth. You guys answer to Christ. I'm an apostle. You're going to answer to me because I'm Christ's apostle. And Christ is not weak towards you, even though he died in weakness or appeared to die in weakness. So just as Christ is not weak towards you, but Christ is mighty in you, he was crucified in weakness, but he is alive because of the power of God. So the power of God is at play here. And we are weak. And remember what Paul said. Paul said, strength is perfected in weakness. That was the message the Lord gave to Paul. Strength is perfected in weakness when Paul got a thorn in the flesh. We are weak in Christ, but we will live with him because of the power of God. So never suspect that Christ's servants are weak because they serve someone who was crucified, who died in a way that appeared weak. Never suspect that of Christ's servants, of Christ, or of Christ himself, because Christ is mighty. He lives by the power of God. He's mighty in his church. If we still had apostles today, which we don't, they would be mighty in their authority and their dealings with church. And Paul is coming to spare no one. He does, or I should say, Christ speaks through him. And he's coming to set things straight. And the Corinthians should realize that God is mighty, and he's mighty in their church. And with that, we'll move on to the inbox. And we can do it no sooner, because, let me straight with you, I didn't do great on the Bible chapter review today. Everything went wrong. I messed up the entrance. People are driving slow. When people drive slow, it really throws me off. I don't know why. I guess I'm used to moving at a constant speed. It's one of those days on the freeway where everybody everybody slows down to 30 miles an hour for no reason. Do you guys know what a freeway is if you're not from the South? Some people call it the interstate, but where I'm from, we call it the freeway. The interstate is called the freeway because you have toll roads to get you places, and then you have the freeway. There's no tolls on the federal interstate. It's not a toll road, it's a freeway. And some of you around here, I mean, they don't build toll roads like they used to. But this is an interstate freeway without a toll. So whenever I say freeway, I mean interstate. And it's always Interstate 75. And let's go up the interstate to Pennsylvania, where Elsie writes in to the Christian Commute inbox. Do you have a question about Christian apologetics or theology? If you have a show topic suggestion, you can send your question in to SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. Frequent submitter Elsie writes in. She listened to yesterday's show, and I was talking about wishy-washy consumerist Christians. And she asked, what do you mean by wishy-washy consumerist Christians? Well, Elsie, if you want to go back in the archive, all the way back to like the first 2 weeks of the show, I've covered this, but I'll talk about it again. You'll recall yesterday we talked about churches building new buildings, spending a lot of money to build buildings and nice facilities, and then they want to fill them up. And I warned that if a church builds a new building and wants to fill it up, they could be filling it up with wishy-washy consumerist Christians. All right, so the type of person who's a wishy-washy consumerist Christian is a person who will switch churches for something other than orthodoxy or orthopraxy. Orthodoxy being the right belief and the right doctrine, orthodoxy being the right practice of that doctrine. In an old show, one of the earliest shows, I gave the example of my across-the-street neighbor in my old neighborhood. And she, I believe she was a member or grew up at Sam Jones United Methodist Church. But when she went to church on Sunday, for the most part, she'd go to Cross Point City Church. What's the difference? Well, Cross Point City Church is a Southern Baptist church. It's one of these hip Southern Baptist churches that doesn't tell you it's Southern Baptist. But it is. It's a Baptist church. And it's a rock and roll church. They have the nice rock concert of Christian music for you before the sermon. And you have Sam Jones United Methodist Church, which is an older, more traditional, probably a more liturgical high church service you'd get there. Somebody is almost running me off the road. Dodge Ram, I'm in your blind spot. Lady not even paying attention. Okay. I don't know if that's ever happened on the show before. So this person would go to this other church, and she'd say, yeah, you know, my daughter goes to youth group at Sam Jones sometimes. That's where I go when I want to be seen, but on Sundays we go over here to this church. Why is she going to the other church? Because it's rock and roll church. She enjoys the service better. She enjoys the experience better. That's wishy-washy. Why is it wishy-washy? Because they don't believe what the Methodists believe. So, the United Methodist Church is a liberal mainline church, by and large. The Southern Baptist Church is a conservative theological evangelical church. So there's that. And then there's the official theology of both churches. Where Methodists believe you sprinkle babies, that's baptism. Where Baptists say you baptize by immersion. Methodists have bishops in a conference who have authority over them. Baptist churches, they all have local authority. Methodists believe you can lose your salvation. Not that modern-day mainline Methodists think anybody's going to hell. Methodists believe you can lose your salvation. Baptists believe you can't. So they're very real theological and ecclesiastic differences. And ecclesiology is theology. I don't mean to create separate categories. But this person was wishy-washy. They didn't really care about the doctrine. Church is church to them. They're not doctrinal. How are they a consumer? Why? Because they're going for the experience. They're not invested, if you will. They're a consumer. they're not really a part of either local church. They just show up to one. They show up to one, they show up to the other. Why would you show up to one? Well, because I want to be seen by the people I grew up with over here. Why would you show up to the other? Well, I like the rock concert atmosphere. You're a consumer. You're going to what attracts you and draws you. So if a church builds a nice new facility and they get a silver-tongued preacher and they get a really good choir, a really good orchestra, or a really good praise team worship band, and by good, I mean good in terms of skill, not by the rock and roll, the music they're playing, Christian rock music, contemporary music, old Fundy Seth comes out, and they're going to put on this really good service. And there, maybe their church has a gym, and maybe their church has a weekly basketball program or whatever. So people aren't going to the church because of the doctrine or their church discipline or how they live their mission. They're going because of the facilities and the attractiveness. They're a consumer. And where are they going from? They're leaving one church to go to another. But why did they leave? Well, did your church believe something unorthodox? No. They didn't change their beliefs. I agree with my old church beliefs. Well, did your church do something with orthopraxy? Did they start having seeker-sensitive servants? Services? Did they lack church discipline? Did they put a woman in charge of some men in a ministry? You know, did they do something wrong? Did they do something against the doctrine? No. Well, why did you leave? Well, this church over here has a new building. It's got theater seating. It's got buses in the parking lot. Every Wednesday they have a basketball. So I'm going to come over here and be a part of this church. So let me get this straight. Your old church didn't do anything doctrinally wrong and didn't do anything sinful. Is that correct? Right. You're coming over here because you like the facilities and experience better. Right. That's the same reason people switch to a different restaurant or a different insurance company or something like that. It's a different experience, and they're a consumerist. They're not invested in either. They're a customer. So that's what I mean. A wishy-washy consumerist Christian is somebody who's not grounded in doctrine. Doctrine doesn't really matter as long as it's a quote-unquote church. And they are not invested mentally and emotionally in their local church where they're trying to help their local church thrive. They'll just change. Like, oh, I went to Burger King last week. This week I'm going to go to McDonald's. If you're invested in McDonald's, you're going to go there all the time. Again, I don't like to make those business comparisons, but that's what consumerists do. So, Elsie, that's what I mean by a wishy-washy consumerist Christian. And you don't want your church full of those people because they don't make your church stronger. They just dilute it. They dilute the discipleship level of your membership. They're just there. They contribute what may be goat money. And if you don't know what goat money is, you can write me and I'll tell you what goat money is, because that's from an earlier show too. So Elsie, thanks for writing in. Now let's go to today's show, which I'm still going to call Where the Streets Have No Name. All right? anybody ever heard that song by U2? I want to run, I want to hide, I want to tear down the walls that hold me inside. I want to seek shelter from the driving rain where the streets have no name. They're still building them, burning down love. They're still building them, burning down love. Oh, when I go there with you. It's all I can do where the streets have no name. See, I didn't sing it. I just told you what it's about. Bono, the lead singer of U2, is very involved in charity work in Africa. He's from Ireland. And what happens when these rich Westerners go to Africa and they see how poor people are, they're like, oh man, these people aren't worried about our first world problems. They're just trying to get by and live life. This is just pure life over here. So that's what Where the Streets Have No Name means. In the developing world, the streets have no name. Why? Because they haven't built them yet, and they don't have as good an organization. And this is like a literal economic thing. The work of an economist named Hernando de Soto has done work in this area. You can Google this. And Hernando de Soto looked at the North America and South America, and he said, why is North America richer than South America. Both of them have a workforce. Both of them are rich in natural resources. Well, one thing was government authority and organization. When you send a letter in the United States to an address, you can be pretty sure it's going to get there. So if you're a customer and you order something from a vendor, like at my work, we order paper towels for the bathroom for a vendor. So if the girl who does purchasing at my plant orders some paper towels, they're going to send her the paper towels to our address. And then, you know, 30 days later or whatever, she's going to send them a check to their address. That we're sure we're going to get those paper towels. They're sure that they're going to get their check. So sure they sent us the paper towels without us paying them first. And they know if we don't pay that they have legal recourse to go get that money. Hold on a second. I'm going to give some very negative press to True World Foods and this guy in a box truck in the fast lane who has been holding traffic back for miles. True World Foods. Home of the freshest seafood in town and terribly inconsiderate truckers. All right, now going back to my point, something always happens when I'm making a point. People are confident in doing business in the United States because we have addresses. And Hernando de Soto said, literally, South America doesn't have dependable addresses. There's just places, nobody knows who owns it. You can't deliver there. So without addresses, how do you even do business? Well, in Africa, it's a developing country, they don't have dependable addresses like we do. And I hope some listeners not in Africa, I do have an address. I do have an address. How dare you talk to me like I have no address? That's my impression of an African. But pretty bad. But that's what that song talks about, where the streets have no name. It's not covered up with industry. It's still developing. It has the chance to turn into something good. So that's what that song's about. But who shows up religiously where the streets have no name? Charlatans. One of the worst exports from America to Africa is the prosperity gospel and charismaticism. So Africa exports cell phone components and gold to us, and then we export false hope to them in the form of the prosperity gospel. If you look up the richest pastors in Africa, there'll be people, sometimes people with American backgrounds, foisting the prosperity gospel upon uneducated poor people who are desperate. And when people around here are found out for what they are, when prosperity people are found out for what they are here, where do they go? They go to Africa, where the streets have no name. If you're a prosperity huckster in the United States, say Todd White or somebody like that, and he's more of a charismatic healing huckster, I don't know if I'd call him prosperity gospel, people start to see you on YouTube and figure out who you are. We have the internet. We have the news. Like Peter Popoff. Remember, I think this happened in the 80s, when Peter Popoff would hold these miracle crusades, and he'd have an earpiece. And he'd have his wife go and talk to people in the crowd. This is called a hot reading. And they'd tell his wife something about their lives. But they didn't know it was Peter Popoff's wife. And she'd radio to his earpiece. And then he'd say, you have a daughter who's sick, and her name is Barbara. God's going to make her well. And it was, oh my gosh, he knew what I was thinking. This is a man of God. No, he was a charlatan. And they did a news expose on him, just like they did a news expose on Robert Tilton, who was getting letters with prayer requests to his ministry headquarters, opening the envelope, taking the check out, throwing the letter away. And that went all over on the news. Well, where the streets have no name, every big city doesn't have three news agencies. You know, Atlanta and Chattanooga, they all have ABC News, CBS News, NBC News, and Fox News. A local station with its own news staff. And then NBC, ABC, and CBS have national news. And then there's CNN and Fox News. And even MSNBC. And America is so prosperous that we're full of information. Whether if you're a fraud or a charlatan in America, somebody will figure it out and tell everybody else what you did. You can't just go to the next town over. Everyone will know who you are. And everyone there will be educated to a greater degree than people are in Africa. And we have a nice social safety net here. People don't starve here like they do in Africa because we have food stamps and WIC and all kinds of programs. So it's harder to sell the prosperity gospel here. Now, don't get me wrong. It still does pretty well here. But when these evangelists and televangelists are found out to be frauds who do fake miracles, they can still do a big business in Africa. Just look at Clayton Jennings. So he's going to be our case study. We're going to look at Clayton Jennings. So you have this evangelist, Clayton Jennings, who's very popular, and he's going around speaking at FCAs and places like that. He's getting scheduled at conferences with mainstream evangelical evangelists like Tony Nolan. He's speaking at conservative evangelical churches, like his own church, Harbor Shores. But then it comes out that, well, he's a bit of a charlatan. He apparently really, really, really likes girls. And he's having an affair with several women, so he loses his license to minister. So now, no decent church will have him anymore. Well, so what does he do next? Well, now he moves on to the charismatic churches with the husband and wife pastor teams where they claim miracle healings, and he goes to Africa. Clayton Jennings went to Africa with some ministry called The Vine Uganda. And here's a guy. Pay attention. So for years, and all these Instagram posts and Facebook posts and movies and videos and YouTubes, Clayton Jennings is doing spoken word poetry about God. He's basically just preaching basic evangelism and talking about the state of the church. He gets exposed to be a cad. Decent churches won't have him. So to stay in his chosen career as evangelist, he starts going to the prosperity churches or the charismatic churches, the doctrine light churches, the flashy showy churches. And then he goes to Africa and claims that he prayed for a paraplegic, a guy in a wheelchair, and then the guy was able to walk. So first of all, Clayton's dad has a terminal debilitating physical disease. I forget which one it is. It's something like multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease or MS. One of these diseases that affects your physical ability to function. So for 5 years, Clayton Jennings was this nationwide evangelist, never healed anybody, especially his dad. He gets exposed as a cad. One of the first things he does is he goes to Africa and starts reporting that he's healing people. Well, in America, this is what we expect of some charlatan. But in Africa, where the streets have no name, where they're not as far into the information age as we are, they just see some guy from America coming preaching. Oh, this guy's great. He's not a charlatan. They don't know. So you'll see this in these African crusades. There's no internet. I mean, they have the internet. They have websites in Africa, but they don't have the kind of access like we do. They have it, but not as much. Remember, it's where the streets have no name. They have streets. They just don't have a name. In other words, they have development, but they're not as developed as we are in the West. So the phonies can go to Africa and get away with more and more and more and more than they would here. So here in the United States, we see the prosperity hucksters on TBN and, maybe hear them on the radio, and we think, well, they're not that bad. Everybody's going to kind of figure this out, who these people really are. And you think, maybe they're only making money from the United States. They're not. They're not only taking advantage of America's poor and educated, but they're going to Africa where more and more people, a greater percent of the population is poor and uneducated, and they're selling their poisonous heresy there. Hey, and you know what? A dollar in Africa and a dollar in America is worth what? A dollar. So the African people may not have as much money to give the hucksters and the prosperity pimps as the Americans. But there are a greater number of them who will be bamboozled to give. So if you trick 10 Americans to give you $10, you got $100. If you trick 100 Africans to give you $1, you have $100. Well, it's easy to find 100 Africans to trick. Listen to the song False Teachers by Shaolin. It talks about this. Contact Watchman Fellowship. It's a ministry out of Texas, an anti-cult ministry. Contact them about this. They go and try to train African pastors to be prepared for the false prosperity gospel. This is what America's doing. It's shipping the worst of the worst to Africa. And they can flourish there because the streets have no name. Listen, when you see people, mega preachers starting to do substantial work in Africa, you want to think, wow, that's great. They're going and they're taking it to the world. They're telling the world. Gosh, that's Clayton Jennings' theme. That's his constant hashtag, tell the world. Well, some of these people who are telling the world the wrong thing. Where the streets have names, people who cheat you in business go out of business. Going back to the work of Hernando de Soto that I talked about. In the United States, if you cheat people, you will eventually get put out of business. If you order paper towels and then don't send the vendor the money, you'll get sued and lose a judgment. If you don't pay it, the government will come take your stuff and make you go bankrupt. You don't get away with things in the United States like you might get away with things in a developing country. And because people entering the market to do business know that the bad guys don't get away with things, it mitigates the risk of entering the marketplace, and therefore they're more inclined to do it. Therefore, there are more people taking risks in our capitalistic society. Therefore, the market grows, and the invisible hand does its magic through economics and free market capitalism, and all these people taking risks, and people prosper because business is good. And there are less people entering the marketplace and doing business in South America because people don't want to take the risk. That's the work of Hernando de Soto. You can get away with more in South America. There's not a level of trust. And there's no addresses. Well, in Africa, you can get away with more. You can go from town to town, city to city, deceiving poor, uneducated people. That's what America exports as the prosperity gospel. So beware of the preachers who go where the streets have no name. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. I guess that was a lesson in economics more so than religion. But gosh, don't they sometimes tie together? God bless you all. Short show today. I'm out of things to talk about. Keep those show suggestions and questions coming. SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. God bless.